I'm David Smith, and you're listening to the Faith in Teaching podcast from the Kaiser Institute for Christian Teaching and Learning at Calvin University. In this series, we'll be talking with researchers and educators who are working to understand how Christian faith affects teaching, learning, and the way we do education. Today, I've got two people with me from the organization EduDeo, you might be able to figure out the general theme of if you know a little bit of Latin. And so with me today, I've got Tom Dielstra and Laurie Koning. So welcome and thank you for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
So to get us started and orient us a little bit, for people who may not know EduDeo, what is it? What do you do? What's its history? What's the organization all about?
Yeah, so we could start with our mission and vision. I think it's the first thing that comes to mind when describing who EduDeo Ministries is. Our vision is to see every community transformed by the gospel, and we know that that's a very broad and ambitious vision, but we know that we're doing it alongside of a lot of other organizations, and for us, schools and associations, we choose to go into the lane of Christ-centered education. So our desire is that every child is transformed through a Christ-centered education. So that's what we do. We work to promote Christ-centered education for children worldwide. So we work in the majority world. We have 13 partner organizations in 13 different countries around the world, five in Central America, seven in Africa, and one in Indonesia. And these organizations are, sometimes they are branches of a denomination. Sometimes they're kind of their own entity, but they're all organizations that have either, again, part of them focused on education, or they're distinctly focused on Christ-centered education.
So how do those partnerships come about? Do organizations approach you? Do you go looking for organizations to work with? Like, what's the trade-off for an organization in an African country to work with EduDeo?
Yeah, I'd say it's a bit of both. We're largely relationally driven. So of the 13 partners that we currently have, some have sought us out. Others, we have natural connections within the organization or through friends of EduDeo. And then from there, it has grown. So for example, we work with CCAP in Zambia. We have since we started back in 2011. And then a few years ago, we added CCAP Livingstonia in Malawi, who's a sister organization.
And what does EduDeo provide to the partner organization?
So it kind of depends on how long we've been in partnership with the organization. So we always start with our teacher training program, which is Walking Together. And that's the program that Tom and I are most involved in. And so that's where partnerships start. And as the partnership progresses, then we start to get into things like construction projects, or so sending teams from North America often, or supporting student bursaries, anything to do with schools or students or teachers. So we always start with Walking Together, but then it can progress after that. And Walking Together is such an important program for our partners, because we're providing professional development opportunities for them, walking alongside them, providing mentorship. In many of these contexts, there simply is not a lot, aren't a lot of options for professional development. Many teachers are in the schools not necessarily having teacher training themselves. Sometimes they're not even being paid a regular salary. So there are not a lot of options for them. So we recognized way back a need for development of teachers, not just before they get into a school, but also while they're already teaching, to continue to grow and develop.
And the two of you, are you on the road a lot? Do you travel around the schools, or are you just like the operations hub, or what does a week look like for you and EduDeo?
Yeah, it can vary, but largely we take the lead on the Walking Together program in terms of we are matching North American volunteers with each country as we focus on a particular stream that the partner has identified that they'd like to grow in or learn more about. And so for us, it can look like hosting regular walking together meetings with our partner. So we have one meeting per month scheduled with each. Then we also have our conversations with our volunteers, and then just a lot of dialogue back and forth, whether it be through video calls or through email, to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Right. So on your website, you've got this phrase, quality education rooted in the gospel. And, you know, as I like to sometimes say to my education students at the start of the year, you know, the New Testament doesn't mention schools because there weren't any in anything like what we mean by the term these days. So how do you make that connection? What do you mean by quality education rooted in the gospel? Like, what's your take on what that should mean?
Yeah, so when I read that again, I'm reminded of two parts to it. Obviously, we are walking alongside our partners to provide a quality education that the teachers who are within the school's leaders, that they are well equipped to do the work that they are doing, and that they continue to grow, like we said earlier. We want to make sure that we can provide them with support, additional support to what they already have, to make sure that they're adhering to local requirements. So making sure that they can meet the needs of their communities and whatever the local government is asking them to do as well. We're not saying, don't worry about that, replace it with something else. But the Christ-centered, the gospel-centered education we believe is what's creating the real transformation, and acknowledging that God is Lord of all, that we are not just advocating for an education that opens the day up in prayer and maybe closes the day up in prayer and has a chapel session, maybe a Bible class, but that it's because God is Lord of all, of every single subject. He needs to be part of every single subject and be the focus of it. So much of our training has to do with how do you integrate that well into the curriculum that you're being asked to provide.
So can you give us an example of what would be, again, within the way you approach this? If a school comes to you and says, what do you mean integrated into the curriculum? Like, you know, we've got a chapel program, we've got, you know, the kids are passing the math exams. Like, what's this other thing that you're asking us to do?
Yeah, so I think for us, we're looking at, well, what does it mean to embed Christ into every unit and every lesson? And so we spend a lot of time talking about what that can look like, and then working with our learning leaders, who are our volunteers who help go and lead these workshops, on, okay, this is what our partner is looking for specifically. So one of the frameworks that we use is Teaching for Transformation. So there's a number of schools in North America that are using this framework as they embed Christ-centered education in their schools. And now we are using this with a number of our partners as well. And so the idea that our teachers are inviting our students into this bigger story that God has, and what their place within that story is.
I'm going to keep fishing for the math teacher comes to you and says, yeah, but I teach math, right? What example would you give them?
I think that's the classic one, right, that we struggle with here in North America, and it's no different in our partner context. So yeah, I think Teaching for Transformation, not that we do that with all of our partners, but it's a good example of, okay, so we're inviting students into God's story, and everything is part of God's story. So that means math is part of God's story, and there is a design to math, there is structure to math. So what does that reveal about the creator and how he's created the world to be, and how can we use our skills within math to be a blessing and to be responsive disciples in God's world. So yeah, I think we try and make sure that our walking together workshops are designed in such a way that they're addressing some of those more difficult aspects of education, where sometimes we think, well, it's probably not as easy to talk about how God plays a role there. So sometimes maybe we even tend to ignore it. But also we talk a lot about not just content curriculum wise, but pedagogy, and how do we as Christian teachers aren't just Christians who are teaching, but are teaching Christianly. What does that look like? And And potentially, does it look any different? Sometimes it might not, on the surface, look that different from another quality institution, but often our motivation for it, how we see the student as a Christ follower, as made in the image of God, how does that change actually how we view our purpose and what we're doing as a school and why we even exist? So trying to get it from the perspective of, yes, the subject area, but also how we do the work that we do.
So in the different areas you work in, what have you run into as being like the biggest needs? Where are the gaps and the shortfalls? Are you dealing with teachers who are basically really competent in their discipline but don't have much theology, or that have the theology but can't connect it? Or are you seeing particular local like political barriers? Or like what are some of the different scenarios you're running into?
Yeah, I'd say some of the scenarios that we run into are actually very similar to challenges that we might face in our North American Christian schools in terms of this false dichotomy of secular and sacred, or what Lori mentioned earlier about, you know, you start your day in prayer, you finish in prayer, great, this is a Christian school. So looking at going beyond those things, and what does it mean to teach Christianly, making sure that the curriculum is covered. But then if we look at some more specific scenarios that our partners might face, is that professional development is very limited for some of the countries that we work in. Some of the teachers haven't had the opportunity to go to teacher's college, or there's not ongoing professional development. And if it is, it's not always Christ-centered. And then what does Christ-centered education look like in terms of, are we just looking to get children saved? Are we just trying to add numbers? Or what does responsive discipleship, informational learning actually look like inside of the classroom and in the school and in the community?
That strikes me as something that's not totally unique to certainly to outside North America. I was at a Christian school that I'm not going to name in another part of North America that I shall also not name within the recent past, and was just chatting to the school leader afterwards and asked what their plans were about professional development. And they said, well, we've never really done professional development. So, you know, that can even be a thing here, but certainly there are other places where it's more difficult to access even what exists around that. What about nesting the needs of the school in the needs of the community? I mean, that must vary across some of the contexts that you work in, right, as to what kinds of community needs you're helping the school to serve.
Yeah, so 13 different countries, 13 very different contexts overall. There are a lot of similarities between them. We have made it a priority to work alongside of communities in the majority world. So there's some real material need there, material poverty. And so that creates, or it is a contributing factor to a lot of other difficulties within families, whether it's brokenness in the family or crime or drug use or gangs, or there's all kinds of different challenges that our partner contexts are facing. So schools tend to be, we like to call them beacons of hope, that they tend to be places where, especially if the community is like I described, that students don't often have other places to go where they have adults who they can trust, places they can go that are safe, that they can be in a comfortable place where they can learn and they're excited to do it. So that tends to be a place not just for students, but I think a lot of times the families benefit from the community outlook that the schools often have. They don't just see themselves as their own little entity. They're often highly involved and engaged in the community. I think that ends up having a real impact beyond the students as well.
So I know different Christian schools worldwide, my mind's going in multiple directions from what you just said. I know a lot of schools have different kind of organizational structures. So some schools are run by churches, some are run by parent mm-hmm. groups. Some are part of the government-funded school system, but are allowed to be faith-based. Do you like get the spread across that? Do you end up working with congregations as well as with the schools, or do you just work really directly with the school and they figure out their relationship to the community?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it highlights too something important for us, is that we don't go out to establish any Edudeo schools. We don't certify schools. You're not going to find Edupeo logos on our on the front of the building of our partner schools. So in that sense, each of the Christian school associations that we work with do have sort of a different structure to them. And some work very closely with their local churches, but others have more of a separation. So from our end within Walking Together, we focus with focus on working with the educational leaders mm-hmm. of that organization. So there are organizations that work with churches, but our contact would be through the educational departments.
Mm-hmm. I was really struck by that phrase you used a moment ago, Laurie, about schools being beacons of hope, because we've been doing some work around the concept of hope at the Kaiser Institute, and as we've been doing some literature surveying, we're actually finding that it almost seems like there's more literature on teacher despair than there is on teacher hope. Mm. And we were actually surprised how little there was exploring hope as a concept in relation to teaching and learning. So I'm just curious, is that just, you know, a phrase that you used for yourself just now, or is that a way you're framing it for schools? Are you talking to schools about being beacons of hope? Are they internalizing that kind of language? Is that one of the lenses you use for thinking about faith in schooling?
Yeah, I think it's a both and. I think they're already doing it well before we are involved with the communities and the networks of schools that we're involved with. They're already beacons of hope, and we encourage them in that. And I think that's what's really exciting for us, is that we're constantly learning what they're already doing and discovering what God's already doing there, and just coming alongside them and doing whatever we can to support that. So I wouldn't say that we have a part to play, but we're not initiating that at all. It's already happening. And there's a real hunger to just keep doing it. And I think a lot of teachers are finding it difficult. If you're talking about teacher burnout and teachers just being overwhelmed, that definitely is the case in these contexts as well. But they still, despite that, they know the importance that schools have. They know the importance of their own learning and their own growing, and why raising the next generation to be children of God who are faithful to what they've been called to do is so important. I think in many ways, actually, they understand that way better than we do. we learn from them mm-hmm. probably a lot more than we're bringing to their communities.
Mm-hmm. So thinking back across everything we've just talked about, so school needs, community needs, faith and curriculum, what Christ-centered education might mean. Tell me some stories. What have you come across in schools in particular contexts where a teacher's doing something or a school community is doing something, and you've gone, that's what we were looking for, right? That's yeah. That's an example of this. As many of those as you want to tell us.
Sure, yeah. So one of the things Edudeo does is we do school campaigns for North American schools. If they're looking to partner with Edudeo, we'll rally around a specific cause. So the last couple of years, we've been focusing on our partner in Malawi, and we've been calling it the Warm Heart Project. And it's a campaign where our friends in Malawi have a few schools for students who either are deaf or students who are blind. And in this country, it's very rare to have schools focusing on these needs. But our partners have said, this is a high priority for us. These are image bearers of Christ, and we need to make sure that they get a quality Christian education. So very rare for these schools to exist in the first place. And then what our partners are doing with them is they are bringing these children in right from across the country, oftentimes. And these children have faced very difficult lives in their home settings, or even communication is extremely challenging in the home. So the school is providing a quality education that we've been able to partner with, in terms of our specific focus was on raising funds for each of these schools to have a garden so that they could grow food in order to make sure that the students had enough to eat and that they would remain in the school all year. And then our partners took this a step further, where they said it's also really important that the parents learn how to communicate with their children. So they offered sign language training classes to all of the parents. And we were able to see some footage of that, and to imagine as a parent not being able to communicate with my child, and then because the school has prioritized this and put these lessons on, they were able to communicate in this way for the first time. And it was just incredibly beautiful.
So that example, before we throw in any more, that example already starts to help me to reframe some of the things you were saying earlier, because I mean, speaking broad brush, one of the things I think sometimes happens in the West is when we start talking about quality education, one way of interpreting that is, how can we have a highly competitive school that gets the maximum number of students through the most difficult exams? Mm. And that can actually create pressures that push against catering for students with significant learning needs, because they bring your averages down or they stretch your resources thin. So already in that story, you've just given a slight reframe of what quality education might mean. One that I think is very consistent with a long Christian tradition of talking about that, right? That it's education that is genuinely serving every kind of human being.
Mm-hmm. So. Especially in that context, what you just said about, well, what is, does quality mean that we just have very high performing students that can do really well in exams? In the African context, exams are highly important, so important. And they, in the context of Malawi, I would say other contexts within Africa as well, and other places too, they, because the students with hearing and visual impairment and other disabilities, students with special needs, because they're not able to perform at that level academically, then often there's this overall view that they're not good for really anything. Right. That sometimes families even deny the fact that they have children that have these disabilities. And so what's really, I found profoundly inspiring about our partner there, Church of Central Africa Presbyterian Livingstonia Synod, they're not just providing quality education and allowing the students to have food when they attend school. Often they stay at school, so gardens are really important. The campaign also involved sending teachers to get special education training at one specific teacher's college that provides that. But they're overall just changing people's minds about what does it mean to be a human being, and what does it mean to be a child of God, and what does it mean to have value, and some of these like fundamental ways of seeing right. other people. They're using education to do that, which is really neat.
Yeah, that's great. Any other examples you want to share from schools you've been in?
Yeah, so we have the privilege, Lori and I, of being able to travel to a few partners every year. And so we were recently in Guatemala together, and our partner there, AMG Guatemala, they work with the poorest of the poor, they would say. That's where their schools are situated. And so we were able to see a school. They call them reinforcement centers. So school there, whether it's public or private, would often be just for the morning. So finishing at 12 or so, and then students would go home. Well, in this particular community, the children, largely from the public schools, their home life, that was not a place where they would want to go after school. And so they would come to AMG's reinforcement center, and there they're provided with a meal as well as with a classroom that we can truly say, having seen it, is safe and caring, where they get support from their teachers, where they're able to continue get specific help in the subjects that they might be struggling in, and where they are definitely seen and known and loved, I would say. We were able to spend some time with the principal of the center in particular. And she's been doing this for a long time. And she would say at 5 o'clock, I have to close the doors, like the children have to go home, and they don't want to leave because they identify the school as being such a safe and caring community for them. Another school that AMG works with, they've established a school in one of the garbage dumps, and they would call this an overage school. So children who have not been able to have a formal education, let's say they're in their teens, they're able to go to this school. And so, you know, when we in North America might see it on the news, these dumps and families or communities living there, and AMG has said, we need to make sure there's a school there so that these children can have a quality Christ-centered education. And it's areas where the police don't even want to go to. Mm-hmm. So to see that our partner has taken this so seriously and said, these children need education and they need the gospel. So for us to hear these stories and to be able to share them is such a privilege.
Well, and those stories seem really important because sometimes I find in, I live in West Michigan, when I have conversations occasionally with people about the pros and cons of Christian schools and private schools and so on, some people's mental image is entirely determined by what faith-based schools look like within a five-mile radius of where they live. And, that's just not the case worldwide. It's a lot of different things serving different communities in a lot of different ways. So thank you for sharing those. If anybody who's listening wants to find out more about Edudeo or how they might be able to intersect with you, where should they go?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, edudeo.com, and there's a Who We Are tab that has all the contact information for all the staff members. We are easily accessible through email. We have a presence on Instagram and Facebook as well. If you search for Edudeo Ministry, you should be able to find us there too.
All right, very good. So edudeo.com, Go find out more. An organization you could learn more about. Could maybe consider supporting in some way. And thank you, Laurie, Tom, for joining us and sharing a few stories. And I hope it introduces a few more people to the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having us. We'd love to continue the conversation with your listeners.
You've been listening to the Faith in Teaching podcast from the Kaiser Institute for Christian Teaching and Learning at Calvin University. Learn more at www.pedagogy.net.